Missouri Radio Network, with shows 7 nights a week. You can find the network at BrainInjuryRadio.com or look up Brain Injury Radio Network on Facebook. Another Fork in the Road with your host, Donna O'Donnell Figurski.
Hi, welcome to the Brain Injury Radio Network on blogtalkradio.com. My name is Donna O'Donnell Figurski, and I'm your host on my show, Another Fork in the Road. My show airs on the first and third Sundays of each month at 5:30 p.m. Pacific Time. Just do your translation to get you to Eastern or Central or Mountain. Another Fork in the Road is for anyone with a brain injury, anyone who is caring for a brain-injured person, or anyone with any interest in learning more about brain injury. Brain injury is not discriminating. It can happen to anyone, anywhere, and at any time. The Brain Trauma Foundation states that there are more than 5.3 million people in the United States living with some form of brain injury. Frankly, that number is probably a whole lot higher right now because these statistics were taken, I think, in 2013, and that's the most recent statistics that I can find. So that's a huge number of people living with a brain injury. So something needs to be done about brain injury. You know, and that's what we're doing here on Another Fork in the Road. Is I am trying to raise awareness. I'm trying to get people to understand what brain injury is, what it entails, and what kind of challenges it poses for those people that unfortunately have a brain injury. But frankly, most folks don't even know about brain injury, and I know I'm guilty. I never did, not until it came to live on my doorstep. On Another Fork in the Road, I try to raise awareness of brain injury and to help folks understand what not only survivors go through, but also what their caregivers experience. Because when somebody in a family has a brain injury, it affects everyone. It's not just an isolated injury. It's going to affect just about everybody that person comes in contact with. So knowing how and being able to understand brain injury and the complications that it comes with is what will be very helpful, not only to the people that are learning about it, but also to the survivor, mostly to the survivor. So I think that's, you know, what we're doing here is trying to raise awareness for that. I interview on Another Fork in the Road. I interview brain injury survivors. I interview their caregivers. I delve into their journeys. I want to know how they traverse their world of brain injury, how they get around there, because each brain injury is so different. Every single person has different things that they have to deal with. For example, I always liken it to a snowflake or a finger, a fingertip identification. No fingerprint is exactly the same. There's no snowflake that's exactly the same. None of those can be duplicated. And frankly, although brain injury survivors may share many symptoms and maybe share many challenges, they don't all have the same exact thing. It's almost impossible because the brain is such a very complicated organ. So everybody's different, and you have to look at each survivor as that snowflake or as that fingerprint that is, you know, dealing with something so personal to them. So besides survivors and the caregivers, I also interview therapists and medical professionals just to gain insight into what they offer survivors. And I host a panel discussion the first Sunday of each month to examine pertinent topics related to brain injury. We talk about depression or fatigue. We talk about anger management. On my next show on August 5th is going to be a show with Juliette Madsen and Jeanette Davidson Mayer. Juliet is a survivor, and Jeanette is a caregiver. And the title for the show is, it's kind of like big and long and big words, 50-cent words here, but not so hard to figure out. It's the interaction and the collaboration of brain injury survivor and caregiver. Now, Juliet and Jeanette are not paired. They're not, Jeanette is not the caregiver for Juliet, but they each have their caregiver and their survivor. And we're going to talk about how that marriage basically works. And mine too. My husband has a brain injury, and I will put in my two cents, of course, on what does a caregiver need to do to help his or her survivor, and what does a survivor need from the caregiver. So it's going to be a very, very interesting show. So I hope that you'll tune in at 5:30 p.m. Pacific time on August 5th when the show will be aired from California. So, in the beginning of my journey as a host of the Brain Injury Radio Network, and I'm coming up on this month 4 years, I never aspired to be a radio host. It came in, fell into my lap. I said to my husband, I don't know, I've never done this, I don't know whether I can do this. And he said, try it. And I said, all right. And I did, with a little wobbly knees and everything and shaky voice. And here it's 4 years already that I've been doing this twice a month, sitting in front of this you know, computer studio. And it's been a trip. It's really been a journey. And meeting so many wonderful people that have brain injury, or their caregivers, or their medical teams. So, but if you missed any of my shows, because I did share my story in the very, very beginning of my 4 years, I shared David's and my story. It took us 4 weeks, well, 4 shows, so that would be two months, to get through our story. So you can listen into that by going to Surviving Traumatic Brain Injury blog, .com, survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com. I always say you should get a pencil out, because I will throw out websites, URLs for websites for you to check into. So if you go to that survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com, then click on the air show menu. So on the air show menu will list all of the shows that I had done since August of 2014, I think it was. So you can just, and then scroll down or in the search box. If you're looking for a particular name, then you just simply put the name in the search box, and it will come up anytime they've been on my web, and you can choose your the article or the radio show that you want to hear. So you can also find them on Brain Injury Radio, Blog Talk Radio, on the on-demand section. And at the top, just put my last name in, Figurski. F as in Frank, I-G-U-R-S-K-I. Or you can put in the name of the show, Another Fork in the Road. You will get a spotty list of shows. If you really want to make it easy, go to survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com, because all of the shows are listed there with all of the titles and the guests. So I hope that you're going to find that my show fun tonight and informative with my guest, and I hope that you'll visit the shows of the other hosts on the Brain Injury Radio. And there are shows every night between 7 p.m. Pacific time. We're always working on Pacific time on the Brain Injury Radio, no matter where you are. So do, like I said, do your math. 7 would be 7 Pacific would be 10 Eastern. So anyhow, we have shows from 7 to 10 every night of the week, and on the weekend we begin at 5:30 p.m. Pacific time. So that would be 8:30 Eastern. So for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the shows begin at 5:30 Pacific. The Brain Injury Radio Network airs across the United States in all 52 states and 50 states and in 36 countries. I think I just added a couple states to our country. Anyhow, and 36 countries. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. And I'll tell you a little bit about our guest right now. I always say that brain injury can happen to anyone, anytime, and anywhere. You heard me say that just a few moments ago, and it's true. It can happen to you at home. You could fall down a flight of stairs or misstep getting out of the shower, or you could do one extra chin-up, 13 instead of 12. That 13th chin-up is what caused my husband's life to change forever. And mine too. Remember I said earlier, if you have a brain injury, it does impact the people that you love as well. And it's what caused the 13th chin-up is what caused my husband David's injury. A brain injury can happen when your car is stopped at a red light and the car behind rams into the back of your car, causing your whiplash. You can ask Deb Angus about that. That happened to her many years ago, and she didn't know she had a brain injury for many years until she finally figured it out using her own research to figure out what was going on with her life. Distracted drivers on cell phones, talking, or texting are often the cause of accidents that result in brain injuries. When I lived in New Jersey, I was a daily witness to folks on cell phones as they barreled down the 8 lanes of the Garden State Parkway that fed into the toll booth. I truly feared for my life. You know, here we're going. I mean, the highway is like a 60-mile highway, and they're going, you know, going from 4 lanes into 8 or something, into the toll booth, and people are, you know how people go to the toll booth. They're going, you know, looking for that shortest line up there, and they're going to cross 3 lanes to get to it. So they're one car ahead of somebody else. And this is what people were doing every single day on my way to work, and many of them were texting while they were doing it. I just can't conceive of it. It doesn't even make the least little bit of sense to me. But anyhow, that's how brain injuries happen, because of things that people do that don't necessarily need to do those kinds of things. Of course, if you trip and fall, that's different, you know, but when you're putting yourself in danger and other people, that makes absolutely no sense. Well, frankly, I'm glad I live in the desert and steer clear of major highways. We have some, and I have to travel them sometimes, but it's not a daily thing anymore for me. And the only thing that I worry about now that I live in the desert are the coyotes and the javelinas. Javelinas are short, squatty mammals that look like boars or pigs. You ought to look them up online. They are really interesting-looking creatures, and you don't want to run into them. Javelina starts with a J, though. It's a J-A-D-E-L-I-N-A. But take a peek at them. They look like wild boars. They're not. They're not in the pig family at all. But they live in the desert, and they have a reputation of being mean. So you don't want to be caught in a dark alley with them. Or in my case, walking across the street from my house. Yeah, so Google them. They're interesting looking critters, but I digress. So contact sports are commonly in the news with reports of players suffering concussions or serious head injuries. You can hear that almost every day. In some kind of a news report online or on, well, I don't watch television. I don't have a television, so I get all my news on the computer, but almost every day you're hearing something about sports injuries. And George Bisker, a friend and a former San Francisco 49er, has lived for decades with the consequences of a traumatic brain injury from his football days. Another friend and a fellow host on the Brain Injury Radio Network came to a crossroads in her life in another sport. Professional skier Janie Crane Mosey had a traumatic brain injury while in competition in 2015. She was attempting a double flat spin. I have no idea what that is, but Janie nearly lost her life with that attempt. She had done it. She had done it in one of them already, and she had wanted to improve her score in the competition at Whistler, and she tried it again, and she just didn't land the right way at this time, and she was life-flighted out and thought to be didn't expect to make it. She didn't expect it. They did not expect her to live through that. Fortunately, Jamie did. She's a friend of mine now, and she is a fellow host on the Brain Injury Radio Network. Her show is called Life Gets Mo Crazy. So you can tune in those shows. Her shows are opposite mine every second and fourth Sunday at 5:30 p.m. Pacific time. Those are just a few ways to get a brain injury. I think it would take the whole show, the whole 80 minutes or more, to name all the different ways that folks can get a brain injury. So we're not going to do that. But I do want to talk about today's guest. I met Jim Ledgewood at the Rays of Hope Conference, sponsored by the Brain Injury Alliance of Arizona, more commonly called BIAAZ, which is held in Tempe, Arizona. They held this conference in May of each year, and I was fortunate to go to it two times since I've been in the desert here, and it's an absolutely fantastic conference. And if any of the listeners are in the vicinity of this conference, I strongly suggest that you go. It's amazing. So just type in Rays of Hope Conference and put in BIAAZ, Brain Injury Alliance of Arizona. And you'll find out when the next one is coming. I think it's May 17th, if I remember correctly. So anyway, that's coming up, but you're going to want to make sure that you get to go to it. It's a free conference, and it's just so chock full of information. So just one moment here. I'm sorry, I had to pull out for just a second because I just had a tickle in my throat I couldn't get rid of. So anyhow, Jim Ledgewood was the keynote. He was one of the keynote speakers, and I was fascinated by his story this past May of 17. And Jim has a typical dream of a home with a white picket fence. Well, maybe not in the desert, but the typical home anyhow. A family with kids in the yard and a comfortable life here in the desert. But Jim's fairy tale ending didn't happen because he was in the wrong place at the wrong time. Jim was only 27 years old when he had a traumatic brain injury. He was out for a night of entertainment at a sports bar when he stepped outside for air. And some articles that I was reading on the internet about Jim's incident said that was the last he remembers. And the next thing he remembered, he was in the hospital. So I said he was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And it was Jim's dire misfortune to catch a 9-millimeter bullet in the left side of his face. And I'm gonna let Jim tell you that story. But first, I want to welcome him to the Brain Injury Radio and to my show, Another Fork in the Road. So, hi, Jim, and welcome. And it's really nice to have you here. And I was really excited when I met you at the Brain Injury Conference. I was fascinated by your story. So, welcome to my show.
Hello, Donna, and thank you for having me on. It's a privilege to speak to everyone if everyone's listening.
Yeah, well, I hope we should have listeners because we're all over 37 countries, so I think that should we should get somebody to hear us, I hope. So anyway, Jim, I'm going to just start here. And I just alluded to what happened to you that caused your brain injury, but When I heard your story at the Rays of Hope Conference, I was amazed at how you got that brain injury and how what you have endured since. But before we go into that part of your story, I'd like to let the audience know a little bit about you before you had your brain injury. Can you talk to us a little bit about what your dreams were, what you were doing in your life, and how what you were like as a kid, kind of what made you tick?
Sure. Well, start off, I grew up in the Bay Area of California, San Francisco, Oakland, Bay Area. My family, we all grew up there, aunts, uncles, cousins. So we're all pretty close. Typical family, went to school, played sports, graduated high school, went on to junior college, graduated junior college, went on to a 4-year college at Cal Poly Tech for architecture. and graduated there. And I always knew I liked it in Arizona. I had some family that lived out here, so I used to go visit them in the summertime. And I always knew I wanted to move out here, partly because I like the warmer weather than the cold San Francisco, and mostly because it was cheaper than it was in the Bay Area. So I knew I could afford to buy a home when I moved out here. So I graduated college in summer of 2005, June 2005. And I moved out to Arizona within 2 weeks of graduating. I ended up getting a job in the field of architecture within 3 months of being out here. And I continued that job, loved it, great firm. Seemed like everything was going right. The benefits, the work, everything was great. And 6 months after moving out here in Arizona, I went across town to Glendale, Arizona, to watch a relative play in a rock band at a sports bar. And my roommates and I, and one of my roommates' girlfriends, we went to the sports bar. Nothing, no big deal. It seemed like every sports bar you ever been to, nothing unusual. Didn't seem like it was that bad of a neighborhood. So we were having a good time. Night was going on. Night was getting over. The band was packing up. I wanted to get air because they had smoked in the restaurants at that time, and I don't smoke.
Yeah.
I was hot from dancing, and I needed some fresh air. So I remember asking my roommate's girlfriend, who I was dancing with, if she wanted to get some air with me, and she said she was fine. And I remember walking up to the front door, and there was two doors you could walk out of. One was where the band was packing up and moving out of. So I thought, well, I'll go to the other door. There was a young lady taking money at the door for entrance fees for the bands. And I asked her if I needed to get stamped. I just wanted to get some air. She told me, no, you're okay. I'll remember you. And that's the last thing I remember. And that's the last thing she remembers when she hears glass shatter. And she looks over in my direction, the door I walked out, and saw me laying in a pool of blood. Apparently, somebody standing 30 feet away from the front door started shooting. I was hit by the first of 7 bullets that were fired in that direction. The bullet hit me in the left, just below the left temple. It was a 9mm hollow point, which means a hollow point will explode upon impact. So the bullet fragmented or exploded inside my head, where it severed my facial nerve, causing me to be paralyzed on the left side of my face. The bullet then went on to destroy my inner eardrum. So I have no hearing because I have no eardrum in the left ear. Part of the bullet went to the back of my head, where it nicked my carotid artery, which they had to put 25 metal coils onto my artery to stop the bleeding around my brain. Another big chunk of the bullet was real close to my brain, which they were afraid to remove. And I was also told 7 years later that the bullet actually hit my brain. It hit my frontal lobe and my temporal lobe, causing what they call a traumatic brain injury, which I had no idea that it had done that. I was always told that maybe some of my symptoms I was having were PTSD and maybe some of the early bleeding around the brain, so maybe I could work through those as the years went on.
Let me interrupt you there just for a second. You said PTSD, and I want people to understand what that is, because a lot of people that are listening may not know. PTSD stands for post-traumatic stress disorder, and that's when something really, really bad happens to you, and you get revisited by those feelings, or you become the anxiety that happens because of that. It often happens with troops coming back from Iraq or Afghanistan, when they've been involved in an IED and the explosive devices. I forget how to say that one now, another acronym. But the devices that go off, or it could be a rape or anything like that. Something that is really that causes you great traumatic stress can cause that's post-traumatic stress disorder, which means it revisits you. It comes back. It's not just gone away forever. I'm sorry, Jim. Go ahead.
Oh, so, yeah. Where did I leave off? They told me that I had sustained a brain injury 7 years later. So before I knew I had a brain injury, I'd go see a neurologist and a couple other doctors a couple times a year just to make sure everything was okay with the bleeding around the brain, and didn't seem to have too many issues. So I didn't think much of it until maybe 2013 or so. I ended up going back to work for the architecture firm that I worked for when I was hurt, and things were going pretty good. Loved having the job back with them, and I thought things were going real smooth until one day I was called into the office by my managing partner and a project manager, and they just wanted to let me know that things didn't seem right. Some things were off with my work. They weren't sure what it was, but they suggested that they encouraged me to try to get some help, knowing that they knew that I had sustained being shot in the head, and there's a possibility that something's wrong neurologically. So that's when I went and got some help. Dr. Kwasnica at Barrow's Neurological Institute referred me to SWAN, which is a neurological rehab center, and they diagnosed me. They had me go see a neuropsychologist. They figured out what made me tick and what wasn't working, and I had all kinds of different therapists. I had speech therapy, occupational therapy, vocational therapy, you name it, I probably had it with them, and it seemed to help. It was really, really encouraging that I got to get the help I needed to continue the work that I started before I was injured.
Wow. Jim, I'm Ruby from one of the Facebook groups just asked, do you have a sensation of, and she puts in quotes, something being in your brain? Are you aware of that bullet being there, or is it numb?
Well, it's okay, that's kind of a tricky question. I do have numbness in my face from the paralysis, but the bullet in my head, it causes extreme pain. I'm in pain every minute, every day. I'm in pain right now as I talk to you. People
wow.
ask me to put it on a scale 1 to 10, 10 being the highest. I'm at about a 7 or 8 every minute, every day.
Wow. How do you deal with that? I mean, obviously you do because you're going to work and you're being quite successful, but how do you deal with that pain?
Well, when I first realized my pain, I tried just about every prescribed narcotic known to man. The doctors would give me, and they weren't helping. Of course, all they do is make you drowsy. And over time, I learned to deal with it. It's not fun. It's uncomfortable. And when someone's in pain, they can be more irritable than when they're not. So the symptoms show a little bit more with me than they probably would with somebody that isn't in pain every minute, every day. But I just do it because there's really no other choice. The alternative isn't as interesting, and it's not a life to live. So I'd rather push forward.
Wow, that's incredible. So can you actually, I know that you can feel the pain, but can you actually, are you actually aware of that bullet in your head still?
I would say so, because there's a lot of pressure. I think of your brain as a computer. And when you've got a lot of information in your computer, when you download a lot of pictures, you save pictures and movies and documents, and your computer gets really full, it starts to act a little slower and things get a little heavier. Well, I think of my brain as that way, is where normally a computer has open space inside of it where it lets it breathe. Well, when there's a bullet in there and scar tissue forms over it, there's nowhere for all the stuff inside to move around and breathe. So therefore it creates pressure in my head, and it's not fun at all.
Yeah, I can imagine. Thank you, Ruby, for that question. That was really very interesting. Some of the other questions that Ruby has here, I have already in my notes, so I'm going to go through, and hopefully we'll get through all of them. If not, I'll go back to hers and get some more. So I'm going to go on now, Jim, here. You remember several years ago, actually it was in 2011, that Gavin Giffords, who at the time was a member of the U.S. House of Representatives, was shot in the head as she was meeting with her constituents in Tucson, Arizona. And her doctors called her survival miraculous. Nobody expected her to live from that. And I think your survival was surprising and extraordinary as well. I just can't even imagine how you did that. And you did send me pictures. I didn't use a lot of those pictures on the website because I'm sure it would be hard to take for some people. I can deal with it, but it would be hard to take because it was the real thing when you actually got shot. The photos were there. And it's just an incredible thing that you had to go through, you know, just by walking out a door. That's crazy, you know? So I read an article about you in the East Bay Times where doctors said that only 5% of people in the United States who are shot in the head live. And of those, only 5% are able to return to their jobs and resume a fairly normal life. So I'd say that you beat some pretty bad odds, I guess. How do you feel about that? I mean, what's your thought about this actually happening to you? And, I mean, we've met in person, so I know that you look pretty much I wouldn't have questioned anything had I not known that you were the keynote speaker telling me and the rest of this audience of 200 or 300 people what had occurred to you. So what do you think about your being pretty much a miracle man?
Well,
right now. So anyhow, hang on. Okay. Hello, I'm back. Can anyone hear me? Jim, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Donna.
Okay. All of a sudden, I went dead. I don't know whether you did too. I couldn't hear you at all. Did you? Just stay here in the studio? Because I backed out and came back.
Yeah, I've been here the whole time. I don't know where I lost you.
Were you able to hear me talking at all? Because I was talking nonstop, but until I went out. But were you able to hear me at all?
Yeah, the last thing you asked me about being in such a small percentage, and I started to elaborate on that.
Okay, and that was it. All right, then that was it. Okay. I don't know what happened. We had a technical glitch, and everything just kind of went down. But we're back, so that's good. So, yeah, I just wanted to know, how did you feel knowing that you were in such a small percentage of people that would ever live or would ever go back to work after such an ordeal?
It was uplifting, being that I was able to be a person that lived and tell about it and be able to do what I did. I can remember when I first was in the hospital that I told myself over and over again, if I wasn't able to go back and do the things that I worked so hard for before being shot in the head, that I didn't want to go back. And I was able to do it, so I was grateful. But at the same time, being such a small percentage, there's not too many people you can relate to. There's, you know, it's like being in a club when there's only two people in the club. And
right.
you don't get to do too much and not to share ideas or memories or thoughts. So I'm hoping that maybe my endeavor is now leading through this whole brain injury experience will open up discussions for everyone else and meet some new friends.
Yeah. Well, you're in a pretty elite club here with Gabby Giffords. I mean, she was a House representative. So that's, you know, to be in that club with her is kind of like, wow. And Gabby, you know, with her injury too, I mean, she was shot in the head. And she went down to nothing. I mean, she was down to not being able to talk or anything. And she's done a miraculous job too. She has a lot of problems that she has to deal with in her life, but she seems to handle them, at least what I see when I read about her. And I actually met her a couple of months ago when she was up here in my desert and had given a short talk. When it happened to her, I was just like, totally, come on, you know, cheerleading, please let her get better. But just amazed at how hard she had to struggle to do that. So hers was made known to the world, you know, obviously. Yours wasn't, but we certainly know that you had to go through a horrendous ordeal to get back to where you are right now. And I commend you on that. You've done a really great job. And as I know, you said you are back to your job and you're doing, you know, well as far as I can see on that front. So I'm really happy for you there. But had the police ever found the person who shot you?
Yes. After I was shot, just to elaborate on the story some more, the shooter ran down an alleyway towards some apartment complexes where three security guards chased after him. Two of them tried to trap him in this apartment complex while one went directly after him. The one that followed directly after him stopped him and told him that I had still alive, and it's okay, you can stop, don't worry, he's still alive, it won't be that bad. The shooter turned around, fired the gun at security guard, shot the security guard through his butt, went through his lung, through his heart, and killed him.
Oh my gosh.
At this time, when he was being shot, the two officers couldn't get into the complex, so they backtracked where the other security guard had been shot. And by the time they got there, the shooter was gone.
Oh, wow.
It took 3 years to find him. Luck through DNA and ballistics from the bullet that was fired at me, the money bullets that didn't hit me. Three years later, they made an arrest. It took 3 more years after that and 2 trials to convict him. And so, yes, he's been caught.
Okay. I'm really happy to hear that because in my research on this, I didn't see that. I had seen some old stories, but I hadn't seen that he had been caught. Last time I had heard it, 2 years, he hadn't. So I'm really glad that he was caught because, I mean, what a horrible thing. You just have to wonder, what makes people do things like that can impact somebody else's life so drastically and they feel that it's okay to do? Well, that's a judgment call. I can't go into that. But it's just, I feel bad for the security guard. I had heard that part of the story. So I'm really sorry for his loss and his family's loss from that. Finding the person, did that at least give you closure on it?
To a degree, it definitely helped out. I had a good relationship with the detective on the case and during the time, and he always kept me informed, kept me up to date. So I knew it was going to be tough because they didn't have a whole lot to go on, and it was a matter of time before this individual slipped up and got into the system like he did. So, I would say it helped. It helped with knowing that the person that did this to me wasn't out in public doing it to other people because he was reckless and he doesn't have a care about human life.
Right. Yeah, I'm glad that he's off the streets too. But, you know, to have caused that damage to people is just incredible. But talk about the kind of problems or the disabilities that are resulting from your brain injury. I know you said that you've got the pain in your head because of the bullet being lodged there, and that you have numbness and some paralysis on your face. Can you talk about the things that cause you the most difficulty after this incident?
Sure. Well, as I mentioned, the bullet going to my face, I don't know if I mentioned it, the shockwave from the bullet damaged my optic nerve. So I became blind in my left eye. So I don't see in my left eye. I don't hear my left ear, and I have no use of my left side of my face. So it's been a struggle. I had to learn how to swallow because the left side of my mouth and part of my left side of my third of my tongue is numb, and
yeah.
I had to learn how to navigate life with one eye. Depth perception is a real challenge. Your hearing, my hearing is, you know, I'm one ear, so I have a hard time with my depth perception and hearing. I have a hard time understanding where voices are coming from or recognizing them. And as I mentioned, I had a brain injury. Well, part of my brain that was injured controls some of the hearing aspects. And so along with actually losing my ear, I also have injured my brain that controls my hearing as well. So the hearing that I do have some issues with that. So it's been a real struggle with that, along with having the brain injury itself.
Yeah. You said that you, with your mouth being partially paralyzed and having to learn to swallow and everything, do you have trouble when you're chewing food and biting your inside of your mouth or your tongue ever?
Well, I believe I do, and it's hard to say for sure because I have no feeling, but sometimes if I bite over, move my tongue over too far, I can feel it, or I can tell when I'm chewing down that it's not a piece of meat or it's, you know, not a vegetable, the way the texture of my jaw moves, and sometimes food slips over there. I don't realize it because I try not to chew on that left side because I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that my husband has a lot of that problem. That's why I wanted to ask you to see if you had any magic solutions. Because David has some paralysis on his right side of his face. And again, he had the whole swallow issue too. He had to learn how to eat again and learn how to swallow food. And it's still, you know, a very difficult process. And because of that paralysis on his right side, he doesn't, when he's chewing, he has to concentrate when he's chewing. We used to have, you know, dinner and we would just chat and have conversations, and now it's become a very quiet table because if I'm talking to him, then he's not concentrating on his chewing, and he often will bite his lip or bite his tongue, even to the point of bleeding. That's how bad it can be. And so I was curious as to see if that was happening to you. So I am trying to be very, very quiet when we eat and we talk afterwards and prior, but I have all these thoughts going into my head and I'm very impulsive that way. And if a little thought comes up like, oh, look at that, the sky is green today, you know, I have to say it and I have to stop myself now. You know, I just have to stop and say, okay, I'll say this later. And yesterday I was telling him after dinner, I said, you know, I had about 7 or 8 things I really wanted to tell you, and I don't remember any of them now. You know, they were just nothing terribly important, you know, just have something to conversation. I was just going to spurt it out, and it's totally gone at that point, but it's so funny. Oh, okay. Oh, you're not hearing me? Jim, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, Donna.
Jim hears me. Okay. My husband just came in and said that there was technical stuff going on again because he's not hearing anything I'm saying. But I'm hearing you, and you're hearing me. So I'm going to open one of these mics. 812, can you hear us still? I think we're having technical difficulties. 812, are you there?
812.
Try this one. 812, are you there? Area code 812. Okay, I don't know. Nobody's answering me. So we're just going to continue on and hope that this people are hearing. So 812 was actually listed there twice, so it's kind of strange. Maybe they're going out. But as long as you're still hearing me, Jim, is that true?
Yes, I can hear you, Donna.
Okay, all right. Then we'll just keep going. This doesn't usually happen, but I'm hoping that we're still being heard. 812 just came back, so I'm hoping they are hearing us. So anyhow, what I was saying is that with the swallowed, I've lost my train of thought other than the fact that David has that issue with swallowing and biting his thing. So I was very curious about that. So, all right, let's go on then to the next area that I wanted to address. Okay, we're good again. We're being heard in the other room. So, in your interview, Jim, on Survivor Speak Out on my blog, SurvivingTraumaticBrainInjury.com, you wrote that you didn't realize that you had a brain injury until 7 years after the event. Now, obviously, you knew you had something in your head, a bullet in your head. You had the treatment and the surgeries that were going on. And then you said that 7 years later, your bosses were talking to you about the quality of your work changing, and wondering what was going on. Why do you think didn't the original doctors ever mention brain injury to you? Didn't they know that had happened?
I would imagine they did. And maybe, like I said in my keynote speech, they might have told me, but to be honest, maybe because of my brain injury, I don't remember them saying it, or maybe I didn't feel it was significant because the doctors that I was seeing, everything seemed to be going pretty smoothly, except for the fact that when after I got injured, a couple of years after I got injured, they had the big economy turned down. So there were big layoffs, and I was one of those, and I had to get work after that. Well, I was out of work for 3.5 years. It was tough to find work, so I kept thinking it was related to my injury or I was a medical liability because I would raise premiums, and I wasn't sure exactly what it was. I don't, you know, if I would have known the problem right then, I would have went after it right away. For instance, when I realized that I had lost my vision in my left eye, I went immediately and to doctors. I went to Stanford. I went to other doctors in California. I went to Ohio to see if they could fix or help fix my optic nerve. And I even went so far as contacting some American and English doctors that were working in China with stem cells and getting people's optic nerves to work again. And unfortunately, by that time I had found them and started to raise money to go there, my eye had started shrinking because of the paralysis in my face. I had no tear duct, or my tears weren't producing and my eyelid wasn't closing, so my eye was shrinking. So I ended up losing my left eye. So now I have a prosthetic left eye. But if I would have known about my brain injury, or if I could remember that, I would have went after, attacked it, and would have tried to find something right away to help get myself as close as I could to being back to normal before my brain injury.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it's, you know, that was just was really weird because, you know, anybody that has a brain, that has a bullet in the head, you'd almost automatically think brain injury. You know, I get, you know, freaking out when somebody says they tripped and fell and tripped and fell and hit their head, and I go, oh my God, brain injury, or somebody's hit somebody their head, you know, because I think my whole life revolves around brain injury right now, and that's so prevalent on my mind constantly. But I understand, you're right, if you had known, you would have been able to get maybe better care more, you know, sooner than you did, and maybe offset some of it, but who knows? You know, I always say with David, my husband had 3 brain surgeries in less than 2 weeks, And was it the first brain surgery that really devastated him, took him down to infantile state? Or was it the second one? Or was it the third? I'll never know. I just had to keep signing on those dotted lines to, when the doctors put the clipboard in front of me and said, he needs this now. We found this now. You know, and so you just never know. But I always wonder, you know, what if I said no to that third brain surgery? What if I said, no, he's going to be, you know, there, he had an AVM, which is an arterial venous malformation, a tangled blood vessel, which is like a time bomb. And if it goes off, it's going to, you know, cause a bleed in your head, which is very, very dangerous. So I didn't know what to do. You know, I just, and David was in coma, so he couldn't offer any assistance there. So it's a scary thing when you're dealing with this and not knowing what to do. I did do the surgery. I did have them do the surgery on him because I thought I better while he's in here now. And David agreed with me. He wished, you know, afterwards when he found out about 3 months before or 5 months later what had occurred to him, then he was in agreement that he's glad we did it. But you never know. I don't know which one of those surgeries, which one of the bleeds caused the most damage. And I'll never know. I'll never know. Jim, another thing you wrote on Survivor Speak Out interview, you learned that you had both frontal and temporal lobes of your, you had injured both your frontal and your temporal lobes of your brain. And I just want to briefly explain these parts of the brain, and then I will want to know how you were affected by the damage caused in the frontal and the temporal lobes. And I think we've talked about several of them already. We're getting some interference here again.
I can hear you, Donna. Oh.
Okay. There's something going on there. I don't know what it is. But okay. So a major part of the brain is the cerebral cortex, which is itself is divided into four parts. And that they're known as the lobes of your brain. It's almost like if you put your hand up on the right side of your brain and then just go to the back and then do the left side that's coming out there, those are the lobes. They're just big parts of your brain there. And and they're called the frontal, the parietal, the occipital, and the temporal. And we're going to talk about the frontal lobe injury first. So following that kind of an injury, an individual's abilities to make good choices and recognize consequences are often impaired. Damage can cause increased irritability, which may include a change in mood and an inability to regulate behavior, such as anticipation, good goal selection, planning, initiation, sequencing, detecting errors, and initiating novel responses. Do you find, Jim, that any of those were, you know, affected you? That can also, you know, to physical stuff. Like, can you relate to any of those?
Well, yeah, I guess I could. I don't remember which lobe controls which, but I know I have some issues with short-term memory. It affects me a lot. A lot of my emotional controls, whether it be excited or sad, I have what the doctors call a flat face, so I tend not to show emotion as much. I don't feel as excited for certain things, or I may not show being excited for certain things, or I might not show being sad for certain things. Yeah, it's been interesting to learn about it.
That's interesting. Now, do you feel that happiness or that excitement, but just don't show it?
A lot of times, yeah. I feel excited. I don't know if the emotion gets up there, but certain things happen in my life that, yeah, that's really exciting. And maybe a little adrenaline kicks in, but I just don't have that urge to jump up and down and shout or get real angry at whatever caused me to be angry. I mean, I do get angry, but just certain things, I may get overly angry. I have a hard time controlling certain things. I might get really mad at some of the littlest things because there are things that my part of my brain tells me that nothing's wrong and I still can do, or at least I think I can do what I did before I got hurt. So when I can't do it and I keep beating the dead horse on it and nothing happens, it's very frustrating. So I get frustrated quite often.
Yeah, that would be the frontal lobe. That's the emotional lobe. So, yeah. And then the temporal lobe is located behind the ears, and it extends from both sides of the brain. So it goes all the way across. And it is involved, and this is the one that you're dealing with the hearing. It's because it's involved in hearing, and it holds the primary auditory cortex, which receives the sensory information from the ears. So secondary areas process the information into speech and words. And the left temporal damage can disturb recognition of words and impair memory for verbal material. And you said you had a little bit of memory loss and things, but you talk very well, you speak very well, and have all that in control. So, but did that change during? You know, did that improve as you've gotten more years under your belt with the brain injury?
I think I told my speech has gotten better, but I do notice, like, with the memory issue, I have a hard time with what they might call task memory. I had a real hard time before I got help with remembering what to do or write things down or remember where I did his paper, or if someone gave me a task to do, I'd get distracted very easily. And what was really strange about that is I would get distracted, but at the same time, I have a shorter attention span. For instance, I would have a hard time doing long tasks at work or anything I wanted to do. If I want to watch a movie or TV show, I have a hard time mm-hmm. watching a movie at home. I have a real hard time sitting through a two-hour movie at home. My mind starts wandering about doing other things that are what I feel more productive. So I tend to watch sitcoms or half-hour shows, things that are quicker that I can get over.
Yeah, I get that. I understand that. And I think you're not there again.
I'm here, Donna.
Oh, yeah, okay. Oh, it just sounded really dead for a while there. Okay. All right, so, and this is one of the questions that Ruby had kind of too. It's in, I have it in my words, but she wanted to know what do you miss most about your pre-TBI life?
What do I miss most about it?
Yeah.
I don't know, everything. But I've also learned that I, you know, like all the doctors and psychologists and everyone told me, it's the new me, and it's the path that I have to go down, and I tend not to try to dwell too much on what I used to have or what should have been or what could have been. I mean, it would be nice, like I mentioned, aside from the brain injury, it would be nice to be able to use the left side of my face or have both eyes for vision or both ears to hear things, my speech, to process what people are saying quicker, to not take longer to do things. That would be one probably the things I probably miss the most.
Yeah.
Not to see the confusion on my family and friends' face when they look at me and they don't quite get it at first. Because like everyone says, mm-hmm. the brain injury is an invisible injury, and
mm-hmm.
you don't know it until after you're part of it, and it takes you as an outsider to take you a few seconds to go, oh, yeah, that's right. He has a brain injury. Things are a little different now.
Yeah. And people don't get that if they, if you look fine, if you look close, as we put it, normal, Juliet Madsen, who's going to be on my show next week, and I coined that one day. We're like, how to talk about this, you know, the normal. But, I mean, people that don't show brain injury, I think it's very difficult for them because it's hard for people to understand why you're so tired you can't go out. Why can't you go to the movie with me? And you just said you couldn't sit through a two-hour movie. It's really difficult. Your mind gets distracted, and so you focus more on the sitcoms. So and people don't understand that part. And I have so many friends in the brain injury community that look perfectly fine. You know, they look like nothing's ever happened to them. But obviously, they're dealing with these things behind the scene, behind the well, behind the scenes, because they have this confusion in their mind, or they have the loss of memory, or they have some mood changes that are happening, and people say, well, why are you being so grumpy, you know? And it's not something that they're doing on purpose. It's just the new person, the new normal, basically. And it is difficult. Friends, you lose a lot of friends after a brain injury, especially when you have an invisible brain injury. Even with physical disabilities showing, like my husband has a lot of physical disabilities, so it's obvious that he has a brain injury. But he doesn't have any of this memory loss. He doesn't have the aphasia, the speaking that you can't find the words. He doesn't have the mood changes or the anger or the mental fatigue. So we feel very fortunate that it didn't affect him that way. Do we like this physical damage that's occurred to him? No, absolutely not. You know, he has a very difficult time walking. His balance is very challenged. It was funny because we had, we're in the monsoon season in the desert, which means it rains a lot here for a few days every year. And so they call it the monsoon. But anyhow, with that monsoon comes very, very high winds. And I think we had some 14-mile-per-hour winds the other day. And we were getting out of the car, and I told David, I said, I think you need to wait for me to get around the car. And he said, no, I can get out. And he opened the door, and he goes, nope, I think I'll wait. And he kind of said, you're going to get blown over in this wind. And it's funny because here's a man who's, 150 pounds. He's, a healthy, strong man, and he's going to get blown over in a wind. And I worry about that because his balance is so off. His injury was in his cerebellum, which takes which controls the balance and a lot of the involuntary muscles and involuntary things that happen in your body. So yeah, it makes it difficult when you're dealing with family and friends and they don't understand what you are actually going through. So you miss everything in your pre-TBI life. I think I would too. So do you feel that your life is, and I think I know this answer already, but I'm going to ask it, better or worse after your brain injury? And I like to ask that question because I'm often surprised by the answers I receive. And I think I know your answer, I'm pretty sure, but I expect people to hear that life is awful and it's unbearable after a brain injury, because for most survivors it is, So things have changed so drastically. My husband can no longer drive. He can, no longer go outside on his own. He has to have me outside with him everywhere. Other people have, with your lack of vision or your lack of hearing, that makes it difficult for you. It raises that challenge for you. So for most survivors, it's very difficult. But for many people, I've pointed out the positive side of brain injury for them. And I'm always totally amazed by that. And I have a friend who has, she has MS, which is basically, it's a brain control disease. And she said that she likes herself after she got the MS. Now, she is confined to a wheelchair. She has one of those motorized wheelchairs. She cannot go anywhere with that. I was at her apartment one day and watched her try to get to the bathroom. It's very, very difficult. But yet she says, I like myself better. I think that was very interesting. And Deb, whose Survivors Speak Out interview will be published this week, writes that she is, and I'm quoting here, more self-aware, and she feels that she is a more authentic person. And she also states that she is, and again quoting, better able to connect with folks. Deb says a whole lot more. So you're going to have to look for her interview on my blog at survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com this week. It'll probably come out probably Tuesday maybe. I have another one ahead of her for this week, Monday, where it'll go out Monday. So I'm going to ask it anyhow, Jim. Do you think your life is better or worse? You can answer one word if you want.
Well, I don't know. There's a lot of things that I would say were challenging, which I struggle at. But as I've gotten to learn about my brain injury, I've been more confident with my life, and I'm able to do the things that I've accomplished to do. Maybe not at the same rate, but I'm able to do them. So I would say it's neither nor. There are things in my life that I still wish I had that I have struggled with socially, financially. I always thought, you know, I try not to perforate on those, going back to things that were people that are on the same, were on the same timeline as me before injury. So that kind of tends to make me think that life's not as good. But the same token, I feel like I've done a lot of things in my life since my brain injury that I'm able to help others. And I've always liked the idea of being able to help others. It's kind of, I played team sports growing up, so you're part of a team. So,
yeah,
I guess I would probably say lean to, I don't know, better, but and I'm fulfilling my life, maybe not in the same direction I had planned, but it's, I'm doing things and I'm proud of them. And that's all you can ask for, to be happy.
Yeah, you're right. So basically, you took another fork in the road, you know? So
yeah,
you're basically
exactly.
On a different path. And, you know, it happens to so many of us, not just brain injury survivors or any survivor of any kind of medical disease, cancer, or any of the other things that are out there that change our lives drastically. You know, when you retire, I always like to think that when you retire from your job, you get older, you're taking another path there too. You're changing your life. You're moving on and doing something different. And I think that we're always, if we keep that in mind, that we're always evolving as people. We're always changing. I grew up as a teacher. I was a teacher of first and third grade kids. And I did that. And I thought, oh my God, that's me. That defined me. I loved it. You know, and I thought, oh, I can never stop teaching because I was really loving it so much. But that time came and I decided it was time to stop teaching and move on to a different phase or another path or another course. And you do. And new doors open when you keep an open mind like that too. So right now, my door opened because of David's brain injury and because I became so fanatic. I don't know if it's not fanatic, but that's all I do all day long, pretty much. If I'm not in the theater, I do theater. But if I'm not doing that, it's something to do with brain injury. Whether it's booking people guests for this show, whether it's writing articles for my blog or interviews, having like your interviews up on my blog. You can go to Survivors Speak Out. On that blog, it's on the right sidebar. I'll put Jim's name in the search box. You'll find everything that we're talking about now, but maybe some, you know, different aspects of it, because I didn't go through that. I didn't follow that thing because we already knew that. So, so everybody has to, you know, you do have to go for a different thing. Because of this, because of David's injury, I wrote a book. It's called Surviving Traumatic, no, what is it called? Prisoners Without Bars. I'm so used to saying surviving traumatic injury. Prisoners Without Bars, A Caregiver's Tale. And it chronicles David's and my journey through his brain injury for the past 13, well, it's been 13 years now. But it takes us up to about a year and a half when David was able to return to work. So like you, Jim, he was able to return to work. He wasn't supposed to live through any of his brain surgeries, but he did get back to work a year and a half later. He did graduate PhD students. He did oversee their research and guide their research in his laboratory, which is remarkable because the doctors gave me such a slim chance of him living through any of those brain surgeries. So it is, you know, it's our new normal. And that's what I think people have to do. If you fret and, you know, live in the past, you're going to lose too much. So you have to figure out a way to move on. And I think that, you know, I know David's doing that, and I can see that you're doing that. And with helping people, I'm so grateful for you being on my show today because you really gave us a lot of great information about your journey through this brain injury maze, and I have to thank you for that. So I also want to say to you too, Jim, Just comment that I know I think we mentioned it maybe before the show. You were the chair for the run, walk, and roll race. Did I say that? Well, yeah, run, walk, and roll race in Tempe, Arizona, which was sponsored by the Brain Injury Alliance of Arizona, the BIAAZ. And that was held, I think, in April this year. And you and another brain injury survivor who was also shot in the head. So there is somebody that you can relate to right here, which is great. A man named Jason. I'm not going to say his last name because I didn't ask for permission. But can you tell us what your motivation is? We have to make this. We're heading into that last 7 minutes of our show. But can you tell us what your motivation was for that event?
Sure. I was actually asked to be the chair based on my story, and they found me because the rehab center introduced me to the Brain Injury Alliance of Arizona for continuing help with my brain injury and getting resources to help me further along my success in overcoming or getting a hold of this brain injury. So I wanted to be able to, after they asked me to do it, I told them yes. I wanted to be able to be a voice for those that weren't sure what if they had a brain injury, or maybe they could hear my story and say, okay, let's do something about it. If they were afraid to talk about their brain injury because tend to frown on it and because it's invisible. So
yeah,
just be able to be out there and help somebody and get somebody to be more confident about themselves, it helps, because when you're confident, you're happy. And who wants to be around somebody that's not happy?
Yeah, right, exactly. And there are a lot of people in the brain injury community that aren't happy. I mean, they have a right to be not happy because things have really gone south in their lives. But, yeah, they also have to think about, you know, you only have one life, and that's what you dealt, and that's what you have. Make the best of it. You know, they say make lemonade, you know, because otherwise you're going to have your whole life being very uncomfortable and unhappy. Jim, in a recent article, and this is going to be probably have to be my last question, but in a recent article on Arizona Family, azfamily.com, you said that the Brain Injury Alliance, and you just kind of said this just now too, of Arizona, BIAAZ, helped you to use tools that you learned in rehab to better your life and to keep it going. And that's one of the things that I wanted to point out too. So if you are in this area, if you're in the desert of Arizona near the Phoenix area, and you have a brain injury or you suspect somebody does have a brain injury, contact the Brain Injury Alliance of Arizona. Try to get some help. They know a lot of stuff over there, and they can point you in the right direction. And so I think that is really important. And I know at the beginning of our talk this evening, I said that I had met Jim at the Rays of Hope conference sponsored by the Brain Injury Alliance of Arizona. And I'm going to reiterate that this is a wonderful conference. And I urge any survivors of brain injury and their caregivers, their family members, or their friends to attend next May. I think it's May 17th, but you can just go into BIAAZ.com. org, I believe it is, or com. Try either one. You'll get it. And find out when that date is. And don't forget to register for it. It's a free conference, and they have the keynote speakers. They have several keynotes, and they have a lot of breakout sessions. They have breakfast and lunch for you, and a lot of vendors there to, you know, for you to peruse. So, again, try it. You may even really like it. And you may even see me there, because I'll definitely be there next year, too. So, Jim, I think we're going to have to close down right now, because I'm going to have to do my very last bit here. So I just want to say thank you so, so much for joining me this evening and sharing your story. You're very, you know, interesting, but sad story that happened to you. But you can... Let's see then. You can always check out Jim's story on my blog, survivingtraumaticbraininjury.com, put in his last name, LEDGEWOOD, and you will come up with his interview. On the blog, there's a category for brain injury resources and one that shouts out accomplishments, big and small, called Itty Bitty Giant Steps. And you can also send me an Itty Bitty Giant Step. That is anything that you feel you have done to improve yourself, or you've done something. One person sent me, she tied her shoe. This is an adult, not a five-year-old. This is an adult. She came and she said, I tied my shoe for the first time since my brain injury. Wow. That's all I can say is wow. You know, that was a huge accomplishment for her, and I'll never forget that day that she told me that. So, Itty Bitty Giant Steps, send them to me at NeelyF, N-E-E-L-Y-F, at AOL.com, or find me on one of the brain injury communities on Facebook. There's a wonderful section called Guest Bloggers, which gives my readers another perspective from other writers. And so if you're interested in being a guest blogger, contact me again. You can read about my book, Prisoners Without Bars, A Caregiver Story, on SurvivingTraumaticBrainInjury.com. But you can also find it at DonnaFigurski.com. It's a new website I just built. It's to advertise my book to let you know a little bit. There's a lot of sneak peeks on there. There's actually sneak peeks on surviving traumatic brain injury, too. So check it out, because the book is coming out November 1st, and I'm really excited as it's getting closer and closer. Today, I'm going to end the show now because I have 1 minute left to go. I'm sorry if you've had your calls, a question in your calls. We just ran out of time again. We always seem to do that. But as I always say, if you liked my show, tell 10 of your friends. If you hated it, well, tell 10 of your enemies. That works for me. So as the clock is ticking up to 6:50 Pacific time, I bid you all adieu, but please stay tuned to the next show with Matt Duffin. It starts at 7 p.m. Pacific time, and I'll see you on August 5th, Jeanette Davidson-Mayer and Juliet Madsen, and we'll be talking about interaction and collaboration of brain injury survivors and caregivers. Next Sunday, please tune in to Jamie Crane Mosey's show. It's called Life Gets Mo Crazy, and she airs every second and fourth Sunday at 5:30 p.m. Pacific time. So check her out. She has an interesting show, and she was a professional skier, so she's got, and she's a young woman too, so she's got a lot of good insight on things. So check it out and see what you think. And that takes us right up to our time. So, Jim, I just want to say thank you so, so much for joining me tonight and sharing your story. And I am really happy that I have met you and that we were able to put this together today. So, thank you. Jim, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
I just want to say thank you because we're going to tune out tonight.
Okay, you're very welcome, and thank you for having me on the show.
All right, thank you, and I hope to see you again probably next May, if you're
sure.
At the conference, or if not, sooner. Okay, take care, everybody, and thank you all for joining us tonight. Good night. Have a good 2 weeks. I'll see you again.